Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Global Logistics Properties second quarter FY 2015 earnings conference call and webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. At which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone, or you may submit your questions online via the Ask a Question box. I must advise that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, the 4th of November, 2014. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Ms. Amber Goel. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining our first half 2015 earnings conference call and webcast. Our presentation materials and webcast are all available on our website. Today, we'll hear from Jeff Schwartz, Chairman of the Executive Committee, who will provide an overview of our results. Jeff will be followed by Ming Mei, our CEO, who will discuss the operating environment and outlook in each one of our markets. Then our CFO, Heather Cianfrocco, will provide an overview of our financial numbers. Also joining us for today's call is Steve Shuey, our Chief Operating Officer. We will close the call with a Q&A session. Please ask a maximum of two questions, and please ask them together. Thank you, and I will now hand the call over to Jeff.
Thanks, Amber, and good morning, everyone. Today, I'm pleased to give you an overview for results for the half year and second quarter fiscal year 2015. On slide 13, our operational momentum. On slide three, our operational momentum has been strong, with customers continuing to expand with GLP. New and expansion leases grew by 55% to 1.5 million square meters, and we completed $1.5 billion of development starts across China, Japan, and Brazil. This was up 160% year-on-year. In the first half, GLP recognized $76 million of development revaluation gains. These profits are a recurring part of GLP's business, earned on the completion and lease-up of our new developments. Ming will expand later. First half fund management fees have grown 87% year-on-year to $49 million. Just last week, we announced an injection of an additional $2.5 billion of assets from Japan and Brazil into the platform, which will boost our ROE long term. In September, we completed our $2.5 billion China consortium agreement. This is our most significant transaction since our IPO and raises the bar for many years of sustainable growth. First half pro forma earnings were up 12% year-on-year, driven by strong leasing in China and the BR Properties portfolio acquisition in Brazil. In summary, we are confident of ongoing strong demand for our facilities. Further strategic expansion of our fund management platform and the benefits we have yet to benefit from our China consortium agreement. While we remain confident, or we remain mindful of the challenges in the economic environment, we believe that we are well positioned for continued growth. We will continue to monitor the markets and maintain discipline in assessing opportunities as they arise. Before I hand the call over to Ming, I wanted to share with you that I will be taking time off to focus on health-related issues. I will, however, remain Chairman of GLP's Executive Committee, continuing to be involved in strategic decisions. I would like to focus today's session on the business, not on my health. Ming will continue to lead the company, supported by a strong and deep management team that have worked together for over 10 years. GLP's strong growth strategy and expansion plans remain the same. Ming is an outstanding leader whom I've worked closely with throughout the years, and I have all the confidence in him to continue to lead GLP. With that, I'll turn it over to Ming to further discuss our business, the operating environment, and key achievements. Ming?
Well, thank you, Jeff. First, I'd like to highlight the increasing importance of our fund management platform. So if you can turn with me to slide 4. We have seen strong growth in our fund management platform, which has expanded from nothing 3 years ago to over $13 billion of AUM today. This represents a 72% compound annual growth rate. We expect our fund management business to continue to grow at a rapid rate. The fund management platform is a core part of our business and will become an even increasingly important revenue contributor. It provides significant capital to support sustainable long-term growth while enhancing returns on GLP's invested capital. Last week, we expanded GLP Brazil Development Partners 1 by $400 million to $1.5 billion and formed a $1.1 billion GLP Brazil Income Partners 2. Over time, we will optimally recycle all the sales proceeds into the Brazil development. In Japan, we continue our strategy of recycling capital from stabilized assets into development. During the quarter, we completed a sale of $518 million of asset to the GLP J-REIT and recently expanded GLP Development Fund by $500 million to $2.2 billion. That means in recent months, $2.5 billion assets have been added to the platform. This will enable GLP to generate significant fees and promote to capture the partner's share of the value creation. The success of our fund management platform is built on the strength of local teams, logistic expertise, knowledge of the market we operate in, and we continue to see strong demand from capital partners looking to leverage on GLP's operational expertise and further grow our platform. Next, on slide 5, I want to outline the significance of our business of value creation from the developments. Development is a recurring part of GLP business and is an important element of long-term earnings composition. Key contributor of recurring value creation include revaluation gains generated from GLP's share of the development completion, as well as development fees and fund management promote earned from our partner's share of the development capex. Value creation is expected to accelerate as GLP ramp up on its development pace. Given the strong demand, we expect to maintain our 25% value creation margins. This will translate to approximately over $1 billion of revaluation gains over the next 3 years. Under our fund management business, we have $6 billion of development fund under management, which provide further upside via development fees and promotes. Already today, we estimate the value of GLP's promote within the fund management platform is well in excess of $275 million. That's discount it and bring it back to today's value. Now we'll take a look at our business in China on slide 6. The macro picture of economic slowdown in China is attracting a lot of attention at the moment. Our view is that we still feel comfortable with the economy as it focuses on fundamentally restructuring the economy. The sector that we focus a lot on, actually more than GDP, is the retail sector, which we continue to see will access a 12% growth. Now, China continues to transition from an investment-led to a domestic consumption-led growth, with e-commerce and a low-level organized retail sales acting as a key driver for demand of our business. Leasing remains strong and was up 74% year-on-year. Over 810,000 square meters of new and expansion leases in China in the second quarter alone. Of that, 28% was e-commerce and express delivery providers. 25% was leased to fast-moving consumer goods. We are seeing some weakness in the clothing sector. Expansion demand from repeat customers is a key driver of our business. During the quarter, over two-thirds of our new leases was with existing customers. And we have seen that over the last 2-3 years. We signed leases with industry leaders like Best Logistics, Good Day Mark, which is a logistic joint venture between Hire and Alibaba, Sinotrans, JD.com, and Costco. We have also seen a significant shift in the region of our customers. China domicile companies now lease 61% of our warehouse spaces, compared to 39% for international customers. Even though international customers continue to grow, but we've seen a faster growth in the China domicile companies. At the time of IPO, domestic customers made up only 36% of our lease space. This is a trend that will continue, given that the new state-owned company partnership we have established follows the China landmark agreement. And as in any economy, typically local domicile companies dominate the economy. Again, we're seeing the leases that we have strike with the state-owned companies, the terms and the contract are consistent with that of our other international companies, with the rent set to market level and annual rental increases, same as our other customers. Development start were up 80% in the second quarter, while completion were up 11% year on year. We remain confident in meeting our target of a 2.4 million square meter development completion for the financial year 2015. We had a first half about 500,000 square meters. This quarter, the next quarter, we expect to be about 700,000 square meters, and then the remaining in the fourth quarter. We have received some questions on the market oversupply or potential market oversupply, and that we'd like to address. First, we track the supply of land very, very closely. The supply of land being released to the market is very limited, and we expect that it will be even more constrained. Second, we utilize our deep in-house resources to monitor each market supply and demand conditions. As I mentioned before, over two-thirds of our new leases are to existing customers, so we have a lot of information to talk to before we even consider a site. And before we commence development of any new projects, we consider the specific market level details, such as upcoming supply being built on land recently sold within the market, compared with customer demand indication to drive a decision. In addition, our portfolio within that submarket must be at least 85% leased, and the projects should have in place a leasing pipeline at least a 1.5 times to 2 times the demand. Within our China portfolio, cap rate have compressed on average about 10 basis points to 6.8%. The same property net operating income was up 6.5% year on year for the first half. Moving to slide 7, we completed our 2.5 billion China consortium agreement in September. The new investors in the second tranche include top tier Chinese institutions like China Development Bank and China Postal, who further augment our access to best in class customers and strategic sites. We remain excited about the significant growth China offers. We anticipate this trend well in advance and have a strategic build up our land bank and land reserve. Our China consortium partners put us in an even stronger position in the market, affording us greater access to land as well as significant leasing and business opportunities. Take, for example, China Development Bank Capital, an investor in the second tranche of a China landmark agreement. We signed a strategic partnership last month. We're the primary development financial institution in China. China Development Bank is the primary development financial institution in China, working closely with local municipalities across the country to provide infrastructure, development, and urbanization. Over half the Chinese roads and railroads have been financed by them. And most of the local government industrial parks receive long-term financing from them. Their strong local network greatly enhances our land sourcing capability as we ramp up growth to drive value creation. To date, we have acquired approximately about 700,000 square meters of buildable area in four major cities and leased around 170,000 square meters with the state-owned companies. I believe this is just the beginning. We expect to see much more progress in the future as we continue to leverage their strong relationship and excellent access to land to continue to build our land reserve. We are already in the discussion with them to collaborate on more than 5 million square meters of buildable area across China. On these land collaborations, we are confident of maintaining our 25% value creation margins. As the market leader within the widest network of modern logistic facilities in China, we are well positioned to meet the demand of leading Chinese institutions looking to optimize their supply chain amid the government's push to increase efficiency and competitiveness. Let's look at Japan on slide 8. We signed over 100,000 square meters of new and expansion leases in the first half, and we continue to receive customer inquiries of more than 500,000 square meters per month in this market. Our portfolio remains 99% leased, and the strong demand of our properties is highlighted by the 100% pre-leasing of GLP Yoshimi and GLP Asuki. This solid customer demand is driven by a limited supply of modern logistic facilities and ongoing supply chain modernization. Vacancy in the main market of Greater Tokyo and Greater Osaka remain at a historical low level of 4% and 0.4% respectively. This quarter, we started 3 new developments at a total development cost of $314 million. Construction costs in Japan have risen amid the ongoing labor shortage, and the upcoming Olympic and GLP continue to be disciplined in pursuing new developments. The recently expanded Japan development venture has a remaining investment capacity of $800 million to be invested over the next 3 years. With our strong balance sheet in place, we will continue to be disciplined and selective in pursuing strategic opportunities to drive shareholder returns. On slide 9, turn to Brazil. We have just injected all the assets we acquired from BR Properties into the newly formed $1.1 billion GLP Brazil Income Partners II Fund. We have co-invested with Canadian Pension Plans Investment Board and a leading North American institutional investors, both of whom are excited fund partners. Again, this is a testament to the demand of our fund management expertise from leading global investors. We commenced $239 million of new development in the first half, more than double a year earlier. This represents approximately 61% of our financial year 2015 target of $390 million new developments. While the economic growth in Brazil has tapered, the cool down in the market have created some opportunity for GLP to acquire good sites at more reasonable prices, such as the recent acquisition of a prime large-scale land parcel in Rio de Janeiro. Comprising of 350,000 square meter buildable area, our strong local team did an excellent job in securing this land of a considerable size and quality and a strategic location. This is something that cannot be replicated. We are also benefiting from the trend of companies moving from owning warehouses to leasing them and a bit to improve supply chain efficiency. Again, our portfolio in Brazil is 90% leased, and the demand continues to be strong despite the slowdown in the economy. In conclusion, we have good operational momentums and are well placed to capitalize on the growth opportunity and select to expand our footprint going forward. I would like now to hand over to our CFO, Heather, to run you through the financial highlights.
Thanks, Ning. Turn to slide 11 of our presentation, which shows an overview of financial results for the second quarter. Second quarter fiscal year 15, revenue increased 32% year-on-year, on the back of a 21% increase in China and inclusion of the BR property portfolio acquisition in Brazil. The second quarter EBIT was 11% lower, largely due to the one-time US$54 million FX losses reported under non-operating income. The FX losses were related to the contribution of assets into the fund management portfolio as a result of the repatriation of proceeds back to the group, and due to the fact that we are reporting in US dollar terms. The 54 million losses consist of two items, 29 million losses in yen and 25 million losses in real. We recognized the 29 million losses in yen in connection with the proceeds from asset sales to the J-REIT, then being repatriated to the group. The historical book value of our assets contributed to J-REIT is at 81 to the dollar, and the September end FX rate is 109. The difference is normally reported in foreign currency translation reserve, or called FCTR, in equity, which is reflected in our reported NAV. Even when the sale proceeds are repatriated to the group, the gains or losses is reclassified from FCTR to P&L. This is what we did this quarter. We did hedge the cash flow from yen to US dollar when the timing and amount is certain, and had gain on FX contract, which is reporting net finance costs. We also recorded 25 million of FX losses arising from the sell down of our own stake in GLP Brazil Income Partner 2. The sell price in local currency was consistent with the price GLP paid to BR Properties plus return earnings. However, the currency has moved from 2.23 in June to the dollar to 2.39 at the end of September. Hence, we realized the losses of 25 million. If we had had the proceeds by taking a forward contract, we would have recognized even bigger losses because the currency has been volatile, especially during presidential election. GLP continues to monitor FX markets, including the Japanese yen and Brazilian real. Our policy is to finance liabilities in local currency, create a natural hedge, offsetting some of our FX exposure. When it comes to repatriation of proceeds, the company will also look to hedge its FX exposure in the event the timing and amount of the cash flow are certain. Earnings this quarter were 38% lower due to higher minority interest following the completion of China Consortium Agreement and the formation of the CLF. On a like-for-like basis, 2Q PATMI increased 11% year-on-year. This includes adjustment for the China Consortium transaction, sale of assets to the J-REIT, FX-related effects, and material non-recurring items. Now moving to slide 12, GLP financial position remains very strong, with net cash of US $587 million. Net debt to assets stands at 3.8% on a look-through basis, so we have a considerable headroom to capitalize on the significant opportunities we see in front of us. In addition, we have improved our disclosure based on investors' and analysts' feedback. For one, we have significantly improved our country segment reporting. On page one of the supplemental financial information pack, we have added new segments in the breakdown of our net asset value, including new look-through disclosure of pro rata NAV by country. On page five, we provide pro rata income statement by country, detailing every line item of the income statement. We also gave detail on revaluation gains, including details on revaluation gains from development completions. Please continue to let us know if you have any feedback or suggestions so we can continue to improve our disclosure. With that, I will hand back to Ambika.
Thank you, Heather. We'll now open the call up for questions. Ming, Heather, and Steve will now be available to answer any questions you have. Caroline, I'll now hand it over to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad, or you may submit your questions online via the Ask a Question box. Our first question comes from the line of Sean Gardiner, Morgan Stanley. Please ask the question.
Hey, hi, morning. Two questions. Firstly, Heather, can you just talk about the increase in other expenses, I think it was up around about $8 million Q-on-Q, and seemed to be much bigger than what I was expecting. So maybe you can just talk about what's going on in that line item in your income statement. And then secondly, for Ming, with the China Development Fund, I think it's almost fully committed. What are the initial plans for the next round of development in China? Is this through another development fund, or how do you think about going around that part of the business? Thanks.
Heather, you want to take the fee, and then I answer Sean's second question.
Sure. On the other expenses, these include the full consolidation of BR property expenses. You obviously see revenue and investment properties, but this also include their full property BR property consolidation impact. In addition, we continue to invest in people. So in China throughout the different countries, we are adding people and also accounting for increasing activities such as professional fees and tax licenses and training of new employees. So that's primary the contribution factor for increasing other expenses.
We're basically investing over what we're seeing the growth demand for the next couple of years. So as you know, one of the reasons why we're doing better than other people is because our team and we are investing in training, developing, but also we're investing for the future. We are very excited about what we see in the pipeline, and so these are investments we're making. To answer your second question, yes, first, development fund in China was fully committed much faster than I think anyone anticipated. And again, as I mentioned, our network effect in China, and also the over 67% of the new leases coming from existing customers, we continue to see strong demand driven by our existing customers and also new segments. So to fund that, we need to take a look at, most people look at our balance sheet and they say, well, you have a lot of cash and you have a lot of room to tap your debt. But given what we have in the pipeline, what we're seeing the activities, we will need to leverage our financial partners to satisfy those demands. So to answer your question directly, yes, we'll be looking at potential second development fund, but we may retain a higher percentage of that and retain the right to sell down, because we believe in the market, we believe in the margin, the value creation. So we will retain as much as our balance sheet allow us to, and also maintain the capital resources to meet our next 2-3 years development demand. So short answer is yes, we will look at a second development fund, but we may retain a high percentage.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Yvonne Von, Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Hi there, thanks for the call. Can I just ask two questions? The first one would be, could you just remind us on the reason for the increase of debt cost? I suspect this would be Brazil, but I'm just wondering whether this number would actually come down after the creation of the Income Partners Fund too. The second question that I have is, you mentioned earlier that there was a 10 bips compression Q-on-Q to 6.8% in China. I'm just wondering whether you could share the corresponding data points for Brazil and Japan, please. Thank you very much.
On the increase in net finance costs, the interest expenses specifically, you are correct. They are contributed by BR property because we do have leverage there, and then interest costs are higher in Brazil than in Japan and China.
Yeah. Going forward, as part of a hedging policy to do more natural hedging, you probably see us increasing our leverage a little bit in Japan. And as a result, we also potentially lower our borrowing costs as well, but that way we're also hedging the yen exposure in Japan as well. On the second question, on the 10 basis point compression in China, We think we're seeing a stable cap rate in Brazil. Given the recent volatility of the election, I think we may have seen the worst and people's expectation. But again, we continue to monitor it closely. Again, cap rate has to do a lot to do with not only interest rate but also supply and demand in the market and the rental growth as well. We continue to see very stable rental growth because we had a built-in inflation of about 6% in our Brazil portfolio. So we're still seeing about 9.3% across portfolio on high quality facilities. And in Japan, I think we will continue to see stable around 5% across the portfolio cap rate, maybe potential 5 to 10 basis point further compression due to some strong rental renewal rental growth as also increased construction costs anywhere around 30 to 40%. So the replacement cost is gone up. So we can see probably some further cap rate compression.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Joy Wong, Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. Just two questions from me. One, I just want if you could elaborate a bit more on your thoughts on gearing. You mentioned you're looking at a second development fund, but actually the group right now is actually in a net cash position. What sort of comfort gearing are you working with, or essentially what sort of development pipeline in dollar term are you looking at? Second question from me is on the Forex front. We have seen increasing volatility in yen and Brazil real. Just your thoughts on when you do, significant transactions like BR property acquisition, how does Forex play into consideration, and going forward, how would you, increase your hedging positions? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Joy. As I mentioned, again, we don't engage in hedging of Forex in countries like Brazil. For example, we suffer a loss of $25 million. From the transaction by selling down. If we were to hedge that, the cost of that would be about $60 million. So again, in hindsight, the cost was would have been a lot more if we go back and backtrack the dates. So what we were trying to do is that we will try and create a natural hedge. As I mentioned earlier, we have a very low interest environment in Japan. And we have underlying asset in Japan that are relatively low leverage, about 50%. So I think what we're going to do is that going forward, we will increase leverage in Japan to create the natural hedge and also create a lower cost of capital for the company as a whole. We look at gearing. Overall, as a company, we will be comfortable around the 30%, given the uncertainty of this environment. We're going to be balancing between conservative and also reserving dry powder for potential movements in the market that can create opportunity for us. So again, I think. We'd be comfortable below the 30% range. On the development pipeline, as we in China, as I indicated to you, we continue to see strong demand from our customers, and we probably looking at maintaining about a 40% growth on the capital outlay and our market in China on an annual basis.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Michael Lim, UBS. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning, Ming and Jeff. I've got two questions. The first one is on the promote fee that you mentioned earlier. I recall you saying something about $275 million. When will promote fees be payable on any of your funds? Will that be for the Japan venture funds in 2016, or does it happen any earlier? And my second question is on the $1 billion of development gains over the next 3 years. Is this solely for China, and or is it broken up between the different countries?
Thank you, Michael. The promote fees, they have different vantages, and we're trying to discount it back to today. What we end the money for? The number right now is a little bit north of $275 million at today's value. We discount it to the local discount rate we apply when we do underwriting in each respective countries. The $1 billion development profit is among the three countries, predominantly driven by the China development activities.
If I could just follow up on the promote fees, this is in addition to the management fees that you get. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then this is only development activity we have done to date. So as we continue to develop in the existing development ventures and also new ventures, that will create additional new values. So it only development thus far.
Okay, and would the first fees come for the Japan venture, development venture in like 5 years after inception?
Well, it's again, this is something that we would discuss with our partners. But eventually, J-REIT is a potential takeout partner. We're not only the development partners, but also we have income partners that we have with CIC. That also is a potential exit to the J-REIT as well. So that's for Japan, and then also for China, the China Development Fund potentially it may also have a liquidity event, over the next 3-4 years. So all these funds typically have a life of about 7-year investment period, and then 2-3 years to exit.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Sean Gardiner, Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Hi, sorry, I'm back with a third question. Ming, can you just talk about, I think it's slide 7, where you talk about the consortium agreement. What is the backlog or expressions of interest that you currently calculating from some of these SOE companies that you're looking at?
Well, again, we won't be able to give you exact numbers, but given that close to half the economic activity are either directly by state-owned companies or relate or supply to state-owned economies, We should expect a significant portion of those business will increase. We also see a major change in how the Chinese government measures state-owned companies. Up till last year, they were measured on revenue. So all the state-owned company CEOs were measured on revenues. And that was a major metric. So everyone grow the company as fast as possible and not worry about cost of capital. Now, the State Asset Administration measures return on invested capital. So all of a sudden, we've seen a major shift. A lot of state-owned companies no longer building everything themselves. So we're seeing a major shift to focus on efficient use of the capital. So that's also a major change in the environment as well. And we've seen that will continue to translate into the future. So that's why you see that we potentially can pick up some of the less productive assets from state-owned companies, and then also leasing to them to give them more flexibility as they expand their business. And that sector will become a significant part of our customer base. As I mentioned, we released earlier. There's one company that by themselves leased over 100,000 square meters from us in one transaction. It's a consumer product, and just that by that one lease, they moved to the top 10 customer list for us in China. And we expect there are more to come in this type of transaction. And again, as I mentioned in my release earlier, the lease, the terms, the rental rate are at market. Some are even better than some international companies can offer us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. Or you may submit your questions online via the Ask a Question box. The next question comes from the line of Derek Low, Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Hi. Just wanted to have some clarification on your China development completions. In the first half, it was something like 500,000 square meters. Any particular reason why in the first half the development completion is so low? That's my first question. And second question relates to the $1 billion of revaluation gain you mentioned earlier. Can you just give us an idea like how much of it is from cap rate compression and how much of it is from income growth?
Okay, thanks, Derek. To answer you on the first question about completion, we, as I mentioned to you, we have gotten to this vicious cycle where it's back-end loaded. So we're trying to break that over time. So right now we completed about 500,000 in the first half, and we're looking at as of now we're looking at about 700,000 completion the third quarter, and the remaining in the fourth quarter. So we're going. Oh, I think it's going to take us a couple of years to smooth that out because we do not like that either because of the allocation resources and project management team and time. So, but a lot of times it has to do with seasonality and also customer changing order, and then just got into this cycle that we want to get out of. So that's something that we're focusing on. We're very conscious of it. And on the one billion, that is purely from revaluation and not from cap rate compression.
So it's all from income growth?
It's basically when you develop, let's say, to an 8.5% yield and you value at 7%, that's where the development reval come in. And then so when we look at the development margin across the company, we're looking at about 20% for Japan. We're looking at about 25 to 30% for China. And we're also looking at about 30% for Brazil.
Oh, sorry. So just to be clear, this revaluation gain you're talking about is actually profits you'll make from developments. It's not the existing portfolio.
No. It's just purely development profit.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Actually, in the supplemental page 5, you look at, we did lay out the details and break out the value creation from development and others. So value creation from development are development gains. The rest, including cap rate compression and rental growth, all in other. So
yeah, we're trying to be, every time you guys have recommendations and suggestions, we will try to include in our supplement and try to be as transparent as possible until someday you tell us that we give you too much information.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Kang Ho Chong, BNP Paribas. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. Question for Ming. In China, what has been the rental price growth per year in the past 5 years? And how do you think that will change over the next 3 to 5 years, considering the supply conditions? Thank you.
For the last 5 years, we had a period of about 2 years. I would say that we're very supply constrained, especially after the financial crisis, no one's developing, and usually it takes a couple of years to ramp up on supply. So between 2010 and 2011 was probably the tightest supply, where you're actually having customer willing to pay for anything to just get access to facilities. So at that point, you have rental growth double digit. I think a normal healthy next 3-5 years, probably in the 4-5% range on rental growth is healthy. And you're gonna have this is on the average across the country. There are gonna be markets like Beijing, Shanghai, and even Shenzhen and Guangzhou where is land is almost impossible to come by. You're gonna see potentially double digit rental growth in those markets. But in general, I think there may be a couple markets that 2 or 3 quarters be oversupply, and those markets may have 2 or 3% rental growth. So, but on average, I think 4 to 5% is a healthy for the next 3-5 years.
Thank you, Ming.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Joy Wong, Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Hey, sorry. Two more questions from me. One is on occupancy in China. Could you talk a little bit about, we have seen 90% as your portfolio grows, the 10% vacancy becomes larger and larger. When do you think we will get to a turning point where, we will start to see this occupancy rate increase? And the second question, just on Japan, you mentioned an increase in costs. How have you seen yield on costs change for Japan? And just a follow-up on what I asked just now, what is the LTV you're looking at in Japan? Thank you.
Okay. You asked 3 questions. You said 2. On occupancy, the question was, we've been hovering around 90%, and when do we expect to that to increase? Again, I think we also need to appreciate that we're adding, 2-3 million square meters of new supply every year, and that that gets the lease up. The thing that's dragging us on the occupancy is there's been around the port area, we have portfolios around the port. That for a couple of years, because the export dropped down from China, we've been lacking. If you look at the domestic consumption, which is all the new facility we've been building, the domestic consumption focus area, the occupancy in that portfolio is in the 94%, 95% occupy. So it's the port. There are 2 areas: the port and the bonded facilities that were targeted for export sectors. That's been the dragging us behind. Now, but in the midterm to long term, I believe that those facilities will be the most valuable, and because they're more specialized and they're more constrained around the port area. If you look at the U.S. economy, where most of the facilities located and the highest value facilities are in the L.A. and Long Beach area, and that's because the goods come in and landed there and distributed to the rest of the country. We believe that as the Chinese economy continue to import more, the port facility and the bonded facility will become in high demand. And so I would say over the next 12, 18 months, you should start seeing that sector continue to pick up. And we're already seeing some of that activity in our ports in Shanghai, more and more all the manufacturers like BMW, Daimler, Chrysler are using that to distribute parks for domestic as well as regional. So I think to answer your question, it probably take another 12 months or so to see that sector to revive. On the yield, on Japan, with increase of construction costs, as I mentioned, we were seeing in Japan in the past, 40% development margins. That was too good to last, and we kind of managed expectations that that will not be a long-term phenomenon. And with more competition coming in, we're seeing right now it's dropping down to about 20%. So if you can do the math, if we have a portfolio yield about 5%, so we must be developing to about 6%. So that's the yield on cost in Japan. LTV for Japan right now we're about 50%. I would say that we will feel comfortable to moving that to 70% or even a little bit higher because again. Leveraging the low-cost environment, but also just doing natural hedging with the currency, because again, we have the underlying asset here to leverage against, and then we can either deploy that capital elsewhere or repay down debt elsewhere. But then, as a company, we will continue to manage the balance sheet below the 30% targeted LTV.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Donald Chua, Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Hi, Ming. Donald here. Just two questions from me. One is on your China leasing. You mentioned earlier that you had Alibaba as one of your tenants for the quarter. How is that momentum going with Alibaba? Are we going to expect Alibaba going to be a top 10 tenant anytime soon? That's the first question. The second question is on Japan. The recent BOJ easing, has that actually changed your strategy in Japan? Are you planning to do more development sites? And are you expecting cap rates to compress because of this? Thanks.
Thank you, Donald. On the China leasing and mentioned Alibaba, Alibaba invested in one of the subsidiary of Good Day Mark, which is one of the largest logistic company focused on large items. It was part of Hire, and then they formed a joint venture with Alibaba. So we've been doing business with Alibaba in two. One is with Alibaba and in Tmall, and then also with their logistic companies. Actually, they are. They just made it in the number 10, I think, on the top 10 list of the customers. Even though we're not concentrating on any particular customer, but they just made it in the top 10. We expect to do more business with them, we also continue to work closely with Alibaba. On the Bank of Japan easing. We are watching the yen closely. That's the one reason why, as a company, we are going to be a little bit more aggressive on borrowing the yen to do more hedging against our asset in place, and then also and capitalize on the low cost environment. For a 10-year fixed all-in cost of less than 1% of borrowing. We like to using that to replace our other financing elsewhere in the world, but also create a natural hedge for our asset in place. We're seeing demand for warehouse continue to be strong. To answer your question, yes, we will be looking for more sites to develop. As I mentioned earlier, on average, we're getting inquiry from customers more than 500,000 square meters. So the challenge is to get good sites, and I believe that we have the best local team on the ground, constantly looking at creative way off market type of sites that can give us a competitive advantage and higher development margins.
Thanks.
Thank you. Today's last question for the Q&A session comes from the line of Mr. Michael Lim from UBS. Please ask your question.
Oh, my question has been answered, so thanks very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much. This concludes the Q&A session. I would now like to hand back to Ming.
Well, I want to thank everyone for dialing in. Again, I want to emphasize that we have a strong operational momentum across our business, particularly in leasing and development starts. GLP is extremely well-positioned as the market leader in each country we chose to operate in, and we have a strong local team and solid balance sheet. This will allow us to capitalize on opportunities as they rise. We have seen remarkable organic growth in our fund management platform over the past 3 years, generate significant income for GLP now and certainly going into the future. On behalf of GLP, we wish Jeff the very best as he focuses on his health and kindly ask for the respect of his privacy at this time. We have full confidence in our talent management team who have been together for the last 10 years and are focused on continuing to execute the company's existing growth strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining our call today. Feel free to contact me for any questions. We look forward to seeing you all soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect.